Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Ramesh Srivastava of Voxtrot. The band is back with its first album in over a decade, Dreamers in Exile, which is out now. The record came about after the group reunited for live shows in 2022 and will likely pave the way for more new Voxtrot music in the future. In this conversation, Srivastava discusses the group's reunion, how it managed to find new audience members during its lengthy hiatus, and how the group has embraced the realities of making and releasing music in the age of streaming and social media. That's Ramesh Srivastava of Voxtrot on Into Music, coming up now.
My understanding is that in some ways, this music is kind of the result of this reunion that you did, because that was like a point where it was like, oh, this is still a thing. This feels good. This feels right. Let's move forward. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. I had maybe started working on some of the songs that ended up on this new Voxtrot album. I had maybe started working on them before we began arranging them as a group, which was in January of 2023, kind of right after that reunion tour. So I probably had some that I maybe envisioned to be for my next solo album. I honestly can't remember, but almost all of it was, you know, once we decided we were going to make this record, I just kind of was demoing furiously, and it all just came together in the last 2.5 years.
It seems to me, because the original band is intact, and I want to talk about that, that you all kind of kept in touch and everything. What were there a lot of talks about, like, well, are we really going to do this, or was
it? There were a lot of talks over the slightly more than a decade that we were broken up about generally whether we would reunite. And this, starting at about, I don't know, maybe 5 years after the breakup, this would kind of come up every year. Like, should we do a reunion tour? It wasn't really talk of new music ever. It was just, should we do a reunion tour? And I was usually the person that said no, because I was doing my solo career. And I don't know, at that time, it felt to me like it would be backtracking. And I thought like I couldn't do both. And I don't know, it just didn't feel right to me. And then I guess maybe something about maybe pandemic lockdown, maybe that did help to make me see the light of that there were lots of people out there that love Voxtrot that would love to hear us again. Maybe a lot of some more time spent on the phone and on the computer, social media, whatever. I couldn't say what it is, but something about that time made me realize that this was definitely worth doing again.
Sometimes you put out a record and it you know, sells, or, you know, whatever the metrics are for it. And maybe you get the sense of like, I don't know if a lot of people heard that, but then over time, somehow, and that seems to be kind of what's happened with your band, right? Like over time there's the fans, and then there's more people coming in the door.
Yeah. It's funny. I was thinking about that exact thing the other day, how when you first start releasing music, it feels like you can tell what's hitting and what's not hitting, you know, and if you're used to stuff hitting, then when something doesn't immediately hit, it just feels so disappointing. Like it feels like a failure, and you feel like you've lost it, like you've lost the touch, whatever, just go into panic. But now, having done this, you know, for 2 decades and having had the experience of, yeah, like walking away from Voxtrot for 10 years and coming back, I see that, yeah, it's true what you're saying. It's like, actually, if you just focus on continuing to create your work and to have a body of work, over time, it does draw people in and it kind of builds its own world without you, the artist, having to be directly involved in like forcing people to listen to it. You know, that's not really what it is. It's really cool because I see some, like, just one quick example, like there's a Voxtrot song called Berlin Without Return, which is put out in 2009. It was the last single we put out before we split initially. And when we put that out, I felt like we had such hype, and then we didn't have it, and I felt like we were invisible at that point. And so we put that out, and we only didn't press that many copies, just a little 7-inch single, just kind of forgot about it, and it's gone on to become one of the most popular Voxtrot songs. I think it's like maybe the third highest in terms of what streams on Spotify or whatever. So it is funny that if you think like you kind of as the artist need to just let go of the expectation of what the reception will be.
And I mean, for some bands, sometimes it's like, oh, there's a placement or something like that. And other times it's just like, do you have a sense of like how people have come to discover the music over time?
I mean, well, the two things that came into existence in the 12 years we were broken up, which have been obviously hugely pivotal, are streaming. And I mean, we had social media, but we did not have Instagram when Voxtrot was a band the first time. We would have just, I don't know when Instagram came into existence, but I guess at scale, it was after 2010 for sure. So we didn't have those two pivotal things. And those things, I mean, obviously, you could go very in depth about the yin yang of the good, you know, like how it has affected everything. But for us, like, I mean, it has been hugely instrumental in terms of not just sustaining an audience in our absentia, but also bringing so many people who are, you know, younger, like Gen Z, into the fold, who I don't know if otherwise, most of them, I don't know if they ever would have found out about Voxtrot.
Well, there's something to be said too about embracing like the new realities, because I see this sometimes where it's like people are like, well, we don't need, you wouldn't believe this, but oh, we don't really need a social media presence, or we're not going to do that, but it's part of the reality, same as streaming. And streaming does open up, like, I mean, you can reach different territories that you couldn't have just putting out physical product.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny. It's like it's tempting, of course, to always like to mentally rebel against whatever the new technology is. And you can go down the road of how streaming has, yeah, like changed people's attitude towards the music in terms of viewing it as, I don't want to say like as more disposable, but you know, you're not buying it. So there's less of an investment there. So it feels like there's so much more music. And yeah, people are statistically less likely to invest attention in it or something. You know, you can go down that road, but I think it's like a fruitless endeavor to try and wish that things were a different way and just have to embrace what are the good parts, you know, and there's a lot of good parts.
Well, and there can be that, like, I sort of marry the old way with the new way, which is that on streaming services or Bandcamp, I'm always kind of like looking for what's coming out. Okay, what's like beyond like the stuff that's getting hyped right at the top? Poke around in there, and then it's like, oh, that seems interesting. Follow that. Oh, that band's coming within 50 miles of me on their tour in their little van.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go see them, you know?
For sure. Yeah, I think like I feel like it's especially if you're finding about music from multiple places, that also helps. It's true like that an algorithm can limit what you're exposed to, of course, is like always feeding directly into your taste, you know, but I think yeah, if you're finding stuff on streaming platforms, and you're listening to local radio, and you're going out to see bands regularly and talking to your friends about music and stuff, I feel like you end up, you know, you get the full rainbow of stuff.
Yeah. It just looks different. So
Yeah.
I mean, same with film, right? Time was that, I'm old enough that I remember the home video kind of revolution, and it was like, oh, you missed this in theaters. Oh, but you got to rent this movie. And then pretty soon it's what all your friends are talking about, right? And then you find out, oh, it's a cult movie. There's this whole groundswell of people who love this thing. And it was just that switch from the theater to the home theater,
But do you feel like, both with music and movies, do you feel like the mood around it now is actually different? I don't know. To me, it's like the format and the platforms have all changed for sure. But I actually feel like the people, age, regardless of age or generation, who are reverent about music, those discussions actually don't feel that much different to me than they did 20 years ago. Like when I'm talking to people about music, even if they're like 18 or 20 years old or whatever, if they're reverent about music, I feel like that has remained the same. And the people that are reverent about music, it's like the same quotient of people proportionally still exists in the population, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just a matter of like conversations. Even on social media, I have a few younger people who like I see what they're buying and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna check that out because I like what they're making musically. If they like that, okay, let's see what it's about. So, it is that is I think as long as you're having a conversation, you're gonna continue to have that same kind of desire to seek things out and so forth.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But you gotta be able to have the
Yes, that's true.
conversations. So and I want to circle back to the records but as I mentioned before, here you are, and it's everybody that was in the band from the start, which is really unusual. How in your case, did that happen? Is it just down to friendship? Is it down to goals? What is it?
Well, we never lost touch completely, so that helps. I guess because, even when a band is broken up or inactive, you're at least still tied together financially. There's at least still some amount of money, depending on the size of your band, anywhere from a trickle of money to a cascade, depending. But there's always some amount of money and some business and some accounting that has to be done with that 4 times a year, and that will at least hold you together by email no matter what. So we never fully lost touch, and we were like friends anyway. We didn't fall out in a huge way with the breakup, so even on a friendship level we never fully lost touch. But because the idea of making a new record was not required of everybody for as part of doing the reunion tour, it was kind of like, well, let's do this and then see if everybody wants to do the next part. It was kind of easy to bring everybody back for the reunion tour. That's like 9 shows that everybody wants to do. Sure, it's a lot of logistics to come to and from Austin for the rehearsals, and then of course to all of those cities because we don't all live, 3 of us live in Texas, but not everybody. So it's a lot of logistics, but everybody wanted to do that. So then when it came to making the new record, it was kind of just off of the heels of that. So we were already used to being in each other's company and working together. So that part felt pretty seamless. In the time since we started making the new record, all 5 original members do play on most of the tracks of the album, but the 2 members that don't live in Texas are now, I don't know, I guess, probably a lot of modern bands that have existed for a long time exist like this, in which they are not officially out of the lineup per se, but we are like on this tour, for example, we play and have done a few shows recently with where we hire in other players because we can't, it's not logistically possible to have everybody there for everything. And yeah, it's just we have to work with the situation the way that it is now.
Yeah, I mean that's just another reality. I mean,
I have, friends, and they've always got somebody on call where it's like, oh, the bass player is in Wyoming. They have a wedding on the weekend of this big run that they have
Yeah.
to be at, so they've got the sub.
Yeah, and I'm open to, well, I guess I'm interested in evolution in general. Like, I'm open to it evolving the way that it evolves versus my initial reaction was that we had to keep it exactly the way that it's always been. Like, that's the only thing that would make it a great story. That's the only thing that would make it work. And I've had to kind of practice this sort of non-attachment approach to it, and just accept that things cannot be the way they've always been, and that it does have to evolve, and to like actually look forward to what happens as it evolves. Yeah, instead of like this controlling feeling of trying to make things a certain way.
So, I mean, you said, I think earlier that some of the songs were kind of initially sort of in the solo pile, and then things became evident that this was going to be a band album. Did that change the writing or how you were thinking about the songs?
So once we started, now that we're talking about it, I do remember the when we decided to make the new album, I definitely already had a certain set of songs that I was envisioning as solo, but some of them I thought maybe it could work for Voxtrot. But it became clear really fast once I sent them to everybody, like, listen through these, pick your favorite, I don't know, three songs to start with. It became clear really fast which ones were going to be correct for Voxtrot and which ones were going to be correct for the solo album, which most of them actually did not make it over to the Voxtrot side. So then once I realized kind of like what works for Voxtrot, I did start writing more with that in mind. Like I did, yeah, it did make, at first I was like, how am I ever gonna divide my brain in two and be like consciously thinking about Voxtrot while I write stuff for my next solo album? Like, where I'm the main songwriter and singer of all of these songs, how will I ever make them different enough? But actually, it has happened naturally, which is surprising.
And I wonder too, I mean, you're probably also accounting for the evolution of the other band members too, like where they're at as players and so forth in that process.
Yeah, for sure. It's like with Voxtrot, something that I like that I had forgotten about because I've been working as a solo artist for, a decade, and having band members that I played with, but much more like where it's I'm kind of always generating the vision, like I'm always in charge of the direction that the song is taking, and I'm still the main songwriter for Voxtrot and have that role to a certain degree, but really, like, the collaboration is so much more. Like, Jason, I mean, all of them, but Jason and I, especially in terms of digging into the arrangements, and Jason is the bass player of Voxtrot, but fleshing out the songs and stuff, it's really like once we start working together, it really expands way beyond what I would have imagined, or just goes in a totally different direction. And I had forgotten about that feeling of collaboration, of really letting go and trusting that once I do that the chemistry or alchemy or whatever you want to call it, that happens when you really let other people in, does expand the final thing. It's just beyond what you could have imagined, and that's like a great surprise. You don't actually have to try and be in control of it the whole time.
That's interesting because, like, when I listen to the album, one of the things that strikes me is like, well, there's two things. One, I feel like at the beginning, it's almost like we're picking up in the middle of a conversation, the way that the record starts. It's like this was going on, and now you're walking into the room. And then just how effortless it sounds, which I know making something sound effortless is a lot of hard work.
I'm happy to hear that. Thank you. Yeah, I guess like, well, it was certainly a lot of hard work, but I would say to an extent, I don't know if I would use the word effortless. I guess I would just return to to me, the thesis is that I just trusted. It's almost like a physical thing that I try to employ, especially when I play with Voxtrot now. And maybe I probably didn't do this as much the first time around because I was more like, I don't know, I was more constricted or something in what I thought we were capable of. But this time around, like I practice like the when we are starting to work on a new song, and let's say I've played them the demo, and then we're going to start working on it as a band, that I practice like just playing and singing it and like kind of relaxing all of the muscles in my body, like letting go. Like I just let the melody and the words and stuff just hang, just go out into the room and just be there. And I trust that whatever my bandmates are playing to come in underneath it, that it's kind of like guided by its own force. It's a weird thing, but it's just, yeah, it's kind of about just totally letting go. And that I try to do a lot on this album, and I think we got some great results out of that.
This is going to come out into the world, and we talked about how there's new audience and stuff, but for some people this could be the first time that they're hearing of the band. They could almost think like this is the first album. Are you like okay with that, that somebody's like, oh, the new band?
Of course. I mean, we would like, in a sense, that's even ideal. I don't know. It's nice to like, we don't always want to talk about the past. And I'm not saying that's what we're doing in this interview, because we're actually not talking about the past that much, which is great. But as you can imagine, a lot of interviews I do, we're always talking about the past. And that's, I'm grateful that we now have like a good, strong legacy. That's awesome. I really value that. It's great to have a catalog that can be continually rediscovered by new generations of people. But we are also like living and creating in the here and now. Like I'm inspired right now, and I always have ideas that I'm working on, and it's nice for people to come into it just experiencing it as it is now without needing to reference like the story of the band that came, but everything that led up to this moment, like we want them to experience it in a pure way.
Does this open the door for other things in the future under the Voxtrot name?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've almost finished. Well, I never stopped demoing furiously after we started with this album in 2023. So I've definitely demoed enough songs for the next one, but we'll keep going. So I'm hoping we have another album. My goal would be like within a year's time of this one, but let's see what happens.
You've been listening to a conversation with Ramesh Srivastava of Voxtrot. The band's new album, Dreamers in Exile, is out now. You can find out more about the band via their official website, voxtrot.net. You can learn more about this podcast, including past episodes, at kmuw.org. We encourage you to subscribe and review the episodes you hear on whichever platform you find them, and welcome your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. As always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.